Welcome back to the Back to Blue podcast. I'm Naka Kondo, lead editor of Back to Blue, an initiative of Economist Impact and the Nippon Foundation on Ocean Health. Ocean pollution is a complex and multifaceted problem. It threatens ecosystems, human health, and economies, but a lack of data about its impact means relatively little is being done to prevent and address it. That's why Back to Blue has published a report, A Global Ocean Free from the Harmful Impacts of Pollution, Roadmap for Action. Here to talk about the roadmap and why it matters is Jessica Brown, Back to Blue's Head of Engagement. Hi, Jess, and thanks for coming.
Hi, Naka.
So Back to Blue has developed a roadmap for action to address the harmful impacts of pollution in the ocean. Why is this, and how did the roadmap come about?
Well, in 2022, Back to Blue published The Invisible Wave, which was a deep dive research report looking at ocean pollution. And we wanted to take an expansive definition of ocean pollution. There's a big focus on plastic, and it's a very visible problem. We see plastic washing up on the beaches. We see the very harmful impacts of plastic. But in The Invisible Wave, we wanted to look beneath the surface and really try to understand more about the types of pollution we don't understand. One of the things that we found in researching The Invisible Wave was that a lot of the data that we thought would be there about ocean pollution just wasn't there. And in fact, many of the scientists that we spoke to said, we think this is a real problem. We really think that pollution is having a really harmful impact on ocean ecosystems, but we don't really have the data that would help us to get a very holistic understanding of that. We've got small studies that exist looking at particular pollutants or looking at particular bays or estuaries, but really in terms of having an understanding of the total and cumulative impact of pollution on the global ocean, we just don't know. Where we got to from that was really this idea of asking ourselves the question, what would it take to start to close this data gap? What would be needed to start to develop a very comprehensive understanding of the presence of pollution in the ocean and of the impact of pollution in the ocean? And from that, begin to have a much clearer picture of what solutions will be needed. And that's how the roadmap came about. The roadmap is really setting out a vision for how we can close that data gap around ocean pollution.
Thank you. I guess when we talk about data gaps, there are various types of gaps in the sense that there's just simply the lack of scientific data itself. It could be that there is data out there, but it's just not accessible. So how do we define this data gap? And why does it matter that we put this roadmap out there?
Yeah, it's a really important question. And as you said, there's no one-size-fits-all answer. One of the real challenges with ocean pollution is it's many different types of pollutants. And the way that these different pollutants impact the global ocean is really different. So understanding what are those gaps and how do we fill them is a real challenge. We've identified four priority gaps to fill as part of this roadmap. One really big gap is what we call the scale gap. There's a lot of areas of the ocean that are really well studied, but not at scale. The global ocean is itself is so enormous that we really just don't have a sense of what is the overall impact of pollution. And so it's really hard to draw conclusions from these small scale studies about the impacts of pollution on the wider ocean. Another gap is really the geography gap. And so most of the studies of ocean pollution, for very practical reasons, focus on coastal waters. We know a lot more about what is happening near the coastlines and a lot less about what's happening in the open ocean and what's happening in the very deep ocean. There's also a big inequity between the focus and the amount of knowledge we have in different coastal areas. So around wealthy countries, we know a lot more. And this is a real challenge because we suspect that in a lot of the countries where the infrastructure to manage pollution entering the ocean is a lot less robust, these are the places that we tend to know the least about it. So this is a real worry. The other gap is what we call the fairness gap. It refers to a set of principles called the FAIR principles for data use. And that means these principles say that data should be findable. It should be accessible. It should be interoperable, which means that different databases can use the data, and it should be reusable. This all sounds pretty academic, but it's really important because what this means, one of the big challenges that we have is that a lot of the data that is collected around ocean pollution, it can't talk to each other. And so in a sense, being able to knit together the studies that do exist would be a huge step forward in helping our understanding of ocean pollution. So making that data much more interoperable is a really important piece of the puzzle. And finally, the next gap is the long-term monitoring gap. And when we talk about other types of oceanographic data, so things like temperature, salinity, there's long-term monitoring, which means that over time, we're taking regular measurements and that's feeding into a really long-term understanding. It means we can do a lot of really good analysis on trends and we can see what's happening over time and make predictions about what will happen in the future. This typically doesn't exist for pollution data. Most of the time, what we see is these short-term studies or point-in-time studies where scientists are taking samples, taking them back to the lab and doing a one-off or a short-term study. This is all really valuable data, but it's not helping us to draw long-term conclusions and to understand over time what impact pollution is having on the ocean. So your next question was, why does this matter? It matters quite a lot. A lot of the scientists that we spoke to said, we need to be taking the precautionary principle. If we are putting these chemicals into the ocean without understanding what harms they're doing, that's a problem. Now, the best case scenario is that actually it turns out maybe there is no harm or there is limited harm. And that's great, but we've got to understand it. Not having that knowledge is no excuse. We need to understand what's happening. One of the other really important things for us is that ocean pollution interacts with so many of the other big environmental problems that we're facing. So we already talked about plastic, and we know that plastic pollution leaks chemicals into the ocean. We don't know a lot more about that. So really understanding what is happening more broadly with chemical pollution in the ocean is going to be really critical in helping us to manage the plastic problem. And as we move towards hopefully having a global treaty on plastic pollution towards the end of 2024, being able to understand and assess how well that is operating and the impact it's having, we're going to need a much better understanding of what's happening with ocean pollution. There's two other interdependent anthropogenic challenges that we face. It's climate change, biodiversity loss, and pollution. And again, our understanding of the way that pollutants change in the ocean have a different impact as the climate changes and as ocean temperatures rise. That's something that's really lacking. We don't really understand yet, because of this lack of data, what are the dependencies, if you like, between climate change's impact on the ocean and pollution's impact on the ocean. The other really important factor is biodiversity loss. Because of this lack of data, it's really difficult to draw large-scale, robust conclusions about the impact of pollutants on biodiversity and on ecosystems.
Thank you for that. When we think of ocean pollution, we now know a lot about plastics, but this roadmap takes a much wider definition of pollution. And as you've mentioned, there's millions of chemicals and a variety of pollution that we do know about, and also those that we don't know about. So what is ocean pollution and where does it come from?
It's really complex, and plastic is part of it. And so when we talk about plastic, you know, there is the solid waste that we see washing up on the beaches. There's also microplastics and nanoplastics. And as I mentioned, plastics are also made from chemicals. So they leach chemical into the ocean, and they can also pick up and transport other chemicals across the ocean. There are around 300,000 chemicals in use. That number is just mind-boggling. The number of those that are going into the ocean, we don't really have a clear picture of, and we don't really understand the impact on ocean ecosystems of a lot of those. There's other types of pollutants as well. So, you know, we've got heavy metals, mercury, lead, copper, nutrients, very often which comes from fertilizers, organic matter from sewage. And, you know, this is a real challenge when we have nutrient pollution in the ocean. It leads to what we call dead zones. So areas where algae consumes so much of the oxygen from the water that all other sea life dies. So this is part of it. It's a big challenge. Pharmaceuticals are something that is increasing quite a lot and quite rapidly in many parts of the ocean. Oils, you know, we talk about oil spills. There's other toxic chemicals that are used to clean up oil spills, as well as, you know, some of the persistent organic pollutants. You may have heard of forever chemicals or PFAS, these chemicals which build up over time and really accumulate and don't go away, hence the name forever chemicals. So, you know, it's a real challenge to put a single definition on ocean pollution. And of course, many of these are completely invisible. It's really difficult to understand the impact that they're having and to get a holistic sense of kind of how they impact the ocean together. I mean, I can tell you a little bit more about where it comes from, because we've thrown out a lot of difficult concepts, I guess, or names to understand. But thinking about where it comes from, I think, is an easier way to think about it. And most of the pollution in the ocean comes from land-based sources. And so that includes farming and agriculture. So it's fertilizers that are leaching into the ocean or coming in through other freshwater systems, such as rivers. The chemicals industry and the whole chemical supply chain, around 95% of all goods manufactured on Earth contain chemicals of some sort. And a lot of these, or some of these, make their way into the ocean. Manufacturing and construction industries, this ranges again from the deliberate dumping of industrial effluents through to just sort of poor end-of-life management for consumer goods that are ending up in waterways when they shouldn't be. Cities and towns, again, through stormwater runoff, through wastewater management and sewage, this is a real cause of ocean pollution. And, you know, this is something really to watch, because as we are seeing intensifying storm surges due to climate change, this is really going to put extra pressure on cities and on the coastal infrastructure in cities and towns. And we can expect that we will see a lot more pollution entering the ocean from these. You know, mining, defense, other offshore industries, there's a whole range of ways that pollution gets into the ocean. And that's what really makes, again, such a challenging problem to solve, because there's not one single problem. It's many different problems, and we've got to take a really big, broad view of how to solve this challenge.
Thank you. And so to come up with this roadmap, what was the process and what does the roadmap recommend?
It's been a long process. We've been putting this together over the last 2 years, and I think it was really important for us as Back to Blue to recognize that this roadmap isn't our recommendations as such, but it's really a collation of the views of a huge group of stakeholders that we've been working with over the past 2 years. And so we have spoken with hundreds of scientists, businesses, data collectors, all sorts of different groups who have a view on this. We have conducted a series of workshops. We've published a couple of research reports and issues papers, which we've then got feedback on. So it's been a really interesting process and quite a detailed process to get to this roadmap. And the roadmap makes a few key recommendations. The first, and this is really critical, is we don't want to produce a new global ocean pollution database. There are so many organizations out there that are already doing amazing work and working really hard in this. And so duplicating that effort is something that all of the stakeholders we engage with told us very clearly they don't want to see. And so what this roadmap recommends is to take a really coordinating approach and bring together and coordinate all of these existing initiatives and identify where the gaps are so they can be filled. So the first recommendation of the roadmap is to establish this high-level, global, multi-stakeholder coordinating task force. And this is really a group of senior people that come together to really mobilize support around this issue and bring together existing initiatives and emerging initiatives. This is a pretty big job. So the roadmap recommends establishing a secretariat that could really support that. Another important recommendation is to publish a global ocean pollution assessment and action plan, which is updated every 5 years. And, you know, we spoke with a lot of different groups about how best to bring together all of the data on ocean pollution. And quite a few different ideas were floated. And we spent a lot of time, I guess, weighing up the pros and cons and consulting very widely. And publishing an assessment every 5 years really strikes a nice balance between being able to really bring together and coordinate a lot of the existing work that's already done, but in a very holistic way without necessarily duplicating or setting up new structures to collect data that's already been collected. And a really important part of that as well is it's not just an assessment, but it's an action plan. Something else that we heard really clearly throughout this process was don't just bring together the data for the sake of it. Having perfect knowledge is not the goal. The goal is understanding the impacts of pollution on the ocean so that we can address them. And so having that action plan as part of the 5-yearly assessment is a really critical tool, because as we begin to close these data gaps and get a much better sense of what is actually happening with ocean pollution and what its impact is on the ocean, that's going to really enable us and enable the global policy community and the global business community to begin to take much more decisive action. And so that's what's really critical here, is that every 5 years we're updating not just our knowledge and our understanding of the impact of pollution in the ocean, but we're updating our ambition on what we're going to do as a global community to solve it. The roadmap recommends establishing 4 independent stakeholder groups. And again, I think something that came through really clearly is we need to have a very science-led process. And so the roadmap recommends having a scientific advisory council that advises the task force and really plays a very active role in bringing together this 5-yearly assessment. And so we want to make sure that as our understanding of ocean pollution changes and our knowledge of the science gets better, that we are using this updated knowledge to stay at the cutting edge. The roadmap also recommends establishing a technology and data advisory council. And again, this is really critical. And you mentioned this before in your opening comments, Naka. It's one thing to have the data. Being able to bring it together in a way which is usable and leverages the best available technologies is a really critically important step. And in fact, before it's really the first step is to understand what it is that we already have and start to use best available technology to draw some conclusions from that. And when we talk about technology, it's really at both ends of the process. And so monitoring technology is improving very rapidly and the costs are coming down, understanding how we can get much better at collecting that data. And then at the other end, processes such as machine learning, which really enable us to make much better use of that data once it's collected, will be critical. So the Technology and Data Advisory Council is a really, really crucial part of the recommendations. Something that we heard very clearly was the process, while it should be science and technology led, it ultimately has to also be driven by the end users of this data. As I said before, having a beautiful database is not worthwhile. It's not a good use of resources unless it's going to lead to action. And so the roadmap recommends the establishment of a policy working group and a business and finance working group to be really actively involved from the very beginning. These stakeholder groups should play a really, really key role in the coordinating task force. These are groups that shouldn't come in at the end once all the decisions have been made and as sort of passive users of the data, but they should really be involved from the very beginning. And the questions that we need to answer are, what is the data that policymakers need? to be able to make decisions about how they address ocean pollution. What is the data that investors and businesses need to be able to make decisions about how their operations are impacting ocean pollution and what they're going to do about it? So it's a very user-driven process. And that came through very clearly through our consultations. And so that's an important part of the recommendations. And finally, the roadmap recommends convening a network of implementation partners. And, you know, these are UN bodies, universities, businesses, government sectors, NGOs. These are all the different organizations who were already out there doing this. And they're doing it in their local area. They've got a specific focus. But really, they're all working towards the same goal, which is this vision of a global ocean free from the harmful impacts of pollution by 2050. And that's why we call this a coordinating task force. It's not a rule-setting body. It's a body that is really to bring together these implementation partners and enable them to work in a much more collaborative fashion. I think that's what the roadmap really tries to do, is enable the organizations that are already out there doing this work to continue doing it, to harmonize that work, to identify the gaps, and hopefully to mobilize action around filling those gaps. I think another really important point to mention in terms of the roadmap's recommendations is that in 2024, we are almost halfway through the UN Ocean Decade. So we've got, you know, just over 5 years to achieve the aims of the UN Ocean Decade. The decade sets out 10 challenges, and challenge number one is to understand and beat marine pollution. And at this point in time, it doesn't look like we're going to meet that challenge. And so this roadmap is really clearly focused on meeting the UN Ocean Decade's challenge number one, to understand and beat marine pollution. And something that came through very clearly and in our consultations and from our perspective at Back to Blue, we really see this as being an integral component of the global effort through the UN Ocean Decade to achieve this challenge.
This is great. And it's really exciting that we've just published the first, I guess, the official draft of the roadmap. So what happens now that the first draft is made public?
Naka, as you said, it's a draft, and that's really important for us. We have consulted very widely to develop this draft, but we really do want to emphasize and stress that this roadmap doesn't belong to Back to Blue. It belongs to the global ocean community. And so we want to make sure that we've got a full year to socialize the roadmap and to take on board any views that we have. Another really important goal for us, in fact, the most important goal over the next year, is to build momentum towards the launch of the final roadmap. And we will be launching the final roadmap 1 year from now in 2025 at the World Ocean Summit in Tokyo. And that comes at a really important moment for the ocean, just a few months before the next UN Ocean Conference in Nice. And for us, our ideal aim is that this is really where we move from talking about the roadmap as a vision to being something that is ready to be adopted and implemented. Back to Blue's role is as a catalyst. We're a convener. We've brought together and synthesized the views of all of the stakeholders that we've been engaging with. But really, we need now a group of organizations to pick this up and to step up to lead the adoption of the roadmap, to lead the task force, and really to make sure that we're able to transform this vision for a global ocean free from the harmful impacts of pollution into a reality, and that we're able to do so in a way that helps us really to achieve the UN Ocean Decade's vision to understand and beat marine pollution.
Thank you so much for that. Thank you, Jess, for your time and for taking us through the roadmap.
Thanks, Naka.
Back to Blue, an initiative of Economist Impact and the Nippon Foundation, are hoping to spearhead a coordinated global response to marine pollution and design a roadmap by 2025 to close the marine pollution data gap. We have published our first official draft of the roadmap in March. To learn more, download our paper. A Global Ocean Free from the Harmful Impacts of Pollution, Roadmap for Action. You can also explore our infographic on our website at backtoblueinitiative.com.